Hey everybody, it's Johnny B. Truant. I'm here for the Badass Project today with Chris Finn. And Chris is the coach of the U.S. Power Soccer team. And if you're not familiar with Power Soccer, we can link to some videos here to show you exactly what that is. But it's soccer played in power wheelchairs, which is pretty cool stuff. And there's a bunch of videos on YouTube you should go check out. But I wanted to talk to Chris, who took his team from sort of the bottom of the pile or unranked to the champions in, was it 07, Chris?
Yes, it was.
So I just wanted to get that story. But first of all, welcome and thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Johnny. It's great to be a part of what you're doing and getting the word out about power soccer and people with disabilities and what it is to just get on with life and move on and do some good things.
Well, so speaking about moving on and getting on with life, could you tell us a little bit about your story? Because I know you had a history when you were younger with wanting to play soccer, and then that transformed for you. Can you take me through that?
Sure. When I was growing up as a little kid in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin, a suburb of Milwaukee, was the thing to do was play soccer to get all that active energy out. And so I grew up playing soccer in the backyard and with all my friends, and I wanted to be the next Pele. I had a dream that I wanted to be the next Pele and play for my country in the World Cup and even won a state championship as a little kid and played all through high school and went on to college and had a spinal cord injury at the age of 21. I fell in a bathroom, just a freak accident. Don't really know exactly how or why, but was out one night and having a few beers with some friends and had to go to the bathroom, and next thing I knew I was on the floor and couldn't move. And then after that, went back to school, got a degree or two, and was looking for a job and searching for something to do, and always wanted to get back involved in sports, but there was nothing for people in power wheelchairs. And I had moved out to California from Wisconsin and found out about a sport called power soccer and went to my first practice. And the minute I got on the court and hit the ball for the first time, I was hooked. I was like, this is where I want to be, what I want to be doing, and I found my passion for sports again and the ability to be involved at that level with a team and being able to make an impact on my own life of getting back into things and feeling energized like I had found a place, because I had applied for over 50 different jobs around the area and didn't get any hits. So I finally found something to get my juices flowing again.
Well, not to be too melodramatic about it, but when you say that it almost sounds like the power soccer was the thing that like reinvigorated you, was that a major thing? Like beforehand, maybe you had one mindset about what you could do and what was possible and what life meant, and then afterward this was like, okay, this is what I'm meant to do?
Well, before my injury, I was always passionate about what I did and out there making a difference in people's lives, and wanted to, after my injury, I knew I could still do that, and I just was looking for my place. And I thought, well, let me go out and get that degree or two and then find that job. And I thought, well, I got a degree in educational psychology to go back in the school, get back in the schools and make a difference in kids' lives and through counseling, and then maybe coach a few sports along the way to bring back the sports back into my life, which I knew I wanted, and couldn't find a job. And then I found out about power soccer, went, and that brought the sports back into my life, that team, that active aspect of having something that someone in a power chair, myself, could actually go out and be independent at what I was doing and being active and participating on the court. Mm-hmm. After my injury, when I was looking for a sport, you know, the guys who played wheelchair basketball, sometimes they would allow me to come onto the court and play with them. But it was more like I would sit there and move around a little bit, and they would all move around me throwing the ball, and I couldn't really fully participate. Mm-hmm. But power soccer allowed me to fully participate and be independent, making my own decisions and being part of that team again. That really brought that aspect back to my life. And then from there, as a player, 3 months later, they asked me if I wanted to coach the team, mm-hmm. the local team, and I was like, wow, this is really starting to grow and turn into something. And it allowed me, by coaching, to start making a difference, taking my experiences from sports and life and take that and put that into my coaching and make a difference in other people's lives by not only showing them what sports could do in their life, but instill taking some life experiences and examples and relating the sports to how it coincides with what happens in your everyday life and how working as a team and some of those leadership and trust and confidence and self-esteem things just can translate into your everyday life. So it really allowed me to, you know, do that, take those counseling skills that I learned and put them into effect and do some life examples. So it just grew. You know, I got more and involved in the sport, and the sport started to grow locally and nationally and internationally. And I just wanted to get more involved because it was an opportunity to be part of something at the grassroots level and make a difference, because I knew what the sport did for me. It reinvigorated me with my life and giving me an avenue to make a difference in other people's lives, and I wanted to be able to do the same and show people that, you know, there was a sport out there for people in power wheelchairs that they could actively and independently participate in. And that was huge, because being able to be independent on the court and playing a sport isn't something that's readily available to people in power chairs. And the thing about it is that a lot of the players don't have that chance in life to be fully independent and making their own decisions. Myself, you know, I need care, helping getting out of bed and doing activities of daily living. And some of the players need 24-hour care, dressing, bathing, feeding, toileting, everything. Mm-hmm. And when they get out on the power soccer court, it's their one opportunity to be totally independent, make their own decisions, be part of a team, and not have someone over their shoulder saying, well, you should do it this way, or let me do this for you. No, it's all down to you.
Right.
And for them to have that power of that decision-making, that independence, it's, you know, sports does so many things for so many people in general, but I think power soccer does that by about 1,000 for people who play, because it's not every day that they can just get up and go out and play in the yard. It's, you know, right. the once a week or twice a week that people practice and be able to get out on the court and have that independence. So it's a phenomenal feeling for those who just start playing.
So you mentioned that there's different levels of mobility within the folks who play. I mean, can you maybe break some of this out for us? Because I know the guy that did murder ball, which is a different sport, obviously, and they use a manual wheelchair, he's a quadriplegic, but it would appear to people who are used to quadriplegic having no mobility, i.e. Christopher Reeves above the waist, it looks like he can do a lot of things with his hands. I noticed that you can as well, but you're quadriplegic, and I noticed that some of the people in the videos, it looks like they really don't have much mobility at all above the waist. So does that make a difference? Well, I guess it's a two-part question. Number one, just What is it considered to be, and I know, I'm sorry, this is a naive question, but what is it considered to be quadriplegic? And number two, does your level of mobility affect your ability to play power soccer?
Both great questions. Being a quadriplegic, the technical definition is not having full function of all four of your limbs. Mm-hmm. So the Mark Zupan, the guy you're referring to from the movie Murderball, he doesn't have full function of all four of his limbs, but he does have a lot of function in those limbs. And the way the spinal cord works is the cervical, there's eight cervical vertebrae, 1 through 8, going down from the right underneath your brain stem and your skull down to the cervical seventh is the bump in the back of your neck that you can feel behind there. And as you go lower on the vertebrae, the more function you get. Christopher Reeve was, I think, right around the cervical 2 vertebrae, really high up, so the only technical movement that you're supposed to have by the books is maybe being able to move your head a little bit. And you need some assistance breathing, and that's why he had the ventilator and a tracheotomy. As you go down to the cervical 3rd and 4th vertebrae, you might have a little shoulder movement, maybe be able to move your shoulders up and down a little bit. And then as you go to get down to a solid cervical 4th vertebrae, you might be able to lose the ventilator and the breathing tube. And then you go to cervical 5th vertebrae. I'm 4 or 5. My injury is between the 4th and 5th. And then you start getting arm movement. So, for instance, the cervical 5th side shows up for me where I can raise my bicep real quick like that and have some deltoid or shoulder movement. Now, on my right side, I can just get my right arm up against gravity and have some shoulder movement over here. That shows that my bicep is real weak and more of the cervical 4th side of things. And as you move down the 6th, you get some wrist movement and a little bit of hand movement. The 7th, you start getting the tricep. 6th and 7th, you start getting tricep where you can raise your arm up in the air like you're in the classroom. And a little bit more hand and finger. And 8th, you get a lot of that finger movement, but nothing totally back. And then when you start getting down to the next level, that's where you have a lot more trunk control and a lot more of that mobility that you see with some of those guys like Mark Zupan. So that's a rough definition of how the levels work. As far as what your injury level or what your disability level is to play power soccer, for people with spinal cord injuries, there's right now, actually, we're just internationally, we're coming out with a what's called classification. And what that is a team of classifiers look at your disability and take you through some tests and some drills on seeing what your level of mobility is. And we're starting to establish what the minimum criteria is for being able to play power soccer for any disability. Mm-hmm. Not just because power soccer isn't just for people who are paralyzed, it's for people with muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, and a variety of other different disabilities, all people requiring to use a power chair to play sports. Mm-hmm. And so they look at, if you're a rudimentary way of looking at it is if you don't have enough movement or ability, stamina or strength, whatever that is, to play another sport in a manual wheelchair, that's kind of a rough estimate of, well, then you'd be eligible to play power soccer because you require that power wheelchair to play a sport and be active for that 30 to 40 minutes. And when you start getting to people like Mark Zupan from Murderball, he probably wouldn't be eligible to play power soccer based on that new classification because he has the ability to play Murderball and quad rugby and maybe some other sports. So for me, I would easily qualify because I'm not able to get in that manual chair and actively participate in other sports.
Right. Now, so the guys who have any more mobility, so if somebody had muscular dystrophy and has very little movement and they can basically just whatever it needs to operate the chair, so whether that's finger movement or I don't breath movement or whatever, versus, say, you who has more arm mobility and so forth, does that give you an advantage? How does the sport work in that way?
Sure, not necessarily. And I'll give you a good example. For myself, with my disability, just because I have some arm movement and a little bit of strength that way, when I control my wheelchair with my joystick, it's basically I'm driving with my shoulder because I don't have any fine hand control or finger control. So it's a lot of just driving from my shoulder when you really think about it. And because I don't have really good balance, I wear a chest strap to make sure if I hit a big bump, I don't fall over or something like that. So my balance and my body control, I don't have much of that. So when I'm out there on the court and doing these big spins and quick maneuvers, my body's flying this way and flying that way, and I have to really strap down to be able to even play. And then with my gross motor control is through my shoulder. I don't have that fine motor control. My whole body with moving the joystick, any slight movement real fast is really hard for me to control. Compare that to there's an athlete on our U.S. national team. His name is Jerry, and he has a form of muscular dystrophy, spinal muscular atrophy, and pretty much all the movement he has, he can move his arms a little bit, but his main control is with his fingers. He has a couple. He can move his fingers a little bit and control a joystick. And his body is strapped down, his head's kind of tilted to the side and strapped in because he can't even hold his head up. But he controls his joystick with his fingers, and he's able to do a lot more things a lot better and faster and quicker and better than I can out on the court. So you can, with as little as a couple fingers, you know, and that's all you can control with your body, you could be a better player than someone like me who has a little bit more maybe movement and able to do some things independently for themselves.
Interesting. Okay, well let's talk busting preconceptions here, because when I watch these videos, once you sort of see that these folks are in power wheelchairs and you think, okay, well they're in power wheelchairs and they have some sort of a disability and so forth. Once you get past that, all you just notice is that they're spinning around and they're moving fast and so forth. Do people, I don't know, the families of the athletes or the people in general, do they ever kind of react and go, boy, I don't know. I think there's this perception that if somebody has any sort of a limitation, a lot of people kind of want to coddle them and, well, they're going to get injured or something. I mean, what do you think about that? And with these guys spinning around and so forth, I mean, is it like freedom and that sort of thing? Or is there any concern there?
Well, when I get new athletes, I've had a couple kids come out. They're between 5 and 10 years old, and their parents may have coddled them, as you say, and kind of sheltered them from maybe being involved or doing a few things. They turn their speed real low so they can't go fast in the house, and so they don't break the wall down or, you know, damage the furniture. But when some of these players get out on the court for the first time and they see some of the other players moving around real fast, It's like the first thing they want to do is turn my speed up because I want to go as fast as those people. And I want to be able to do those. And we had a girl come out for the first time just a couple weeks ago. And when we turned her speed up and started, you know, allowing her to be able to do some of those different maneuvers, it was like a whole new world opened up for her. And she was like, I want to go there and I want to go do those things because Mom and Dad have been holding me back. And some of the parents are well-intentioned. You know, they want to do what they think is best for their kids and keep them safe because they think they may be fragile or not being able to do things on their own. But, you know, the best thing for, you know, the kids is actually just the opposite, to let them go. Mm-hmm. Let them fall down. Let them tip over. Let them, you know, go as fast as they can and see what they can do. Because sometimes, you know, I've seen a guy who he controls his chair with his head. He has a headrest where he controls his chair with his head. And when he started playing soccer, he was crashing into everything. But after two or three years of playing, he was going faster than he's ever gone before. And doing some maneuvers that, and driving his chair that, so fine, doing these fine movements, weaving in and out of people, that he would have never been able to do that if he wasn't given the opportunity to be able to grow and do new things. So, yeah, I say let the kids loose and get out there and do those things because it helps their chair control, it helps their confidence, it helps, you know, the self-esteem of, yeah, I can actually do things and progress and be more than what I'm actually led on to believe I can be. And when you get out, you know, and now some of the elite athletes out there in the sport with the U.S. national team, I had one woman on my team in 2007. Two or three years beforehand, she had never even played a sport. You know, I invited her to come out and play with the local team. When I saw her for the first time, I was like, she's going to be a good soccer player. And I invited her to come out. And we got on the court, and because we use a basketball court for boundaries, there was one time I said, well, go over by where the free throw line is located, because I thought everybody knew what a free throw line was. And she just kind of stared at me and, what are you talking about? Because she didn't know what it was. She had no idea anything about sports. But then two or three years later, here she is winning the gold medal in the World Cup in Tokyo, Japan in 2007. And so it's things like that. And we have another athlete on this year's team, and she had never thought about getting involved in sports at all. And now here she is on the verge of potentially going to the World Cup and participating and winning a gold medal herself. And same with some of the guys on the team. It's like one guy on this year's team, he thought, well, when he was first introduced to the sports, he thought, oh, that's just, I don't want to be like some poor disabled person out there just kind of doing some sport or, you know, doing some activity just to be active. But then when he finally got involved in the sport and saw what it did or what it does for people and what it did for him when he got involved and how he could progress and actually that it was a sport. It just wasn't some activity for poor disabled kids. Mm-hmm. It's an actual viable sport, just like any other sport that you go out there and it's blood, sweat, and tears. Let's lay it on the line and, you know, we're out here to win. But, you know, we have fun at the same time.
You know, I know that anything we say here would be opinion and that neither of us are doctors or whatever, but from that perspective, there's the whole the mind-body component of medicine, i.e. if you think you're going to do better, you know, placebo effect. Like, if you think you're likely to improve, then chances are you are. I'm just wondering if folks who get out and bang around and tip over and so forth and discover that maybe they're not as fragile as they had been led to believe, do you think that I mean, I would think that would have some sort of a positive impact even on their on their health.
It could. It could. I think when you find out, when you go out in the world doing a sport or doing anything, and when you've not been allowed to do something or been led to believe that it's only one way, and there, what is it? It's even a, there's a movie about it. What is it? Truman with Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Where he grows up in a bubble, mm-hmm. and every the whole world is playing around him and doing a certain thing. But when he finds out that there's a whole new world out there outside the bubble that he can go out and explore, that and it the opportunities just open up, and your mind and, you know, your body and everything start thinking and discovering that, hey, I can actually do something different. If I take this strap off, what happens if when I test my balance a little bit more? Mm-hmm. Or maybe I can do something else that I didn't realize that was possible. And when we start taking away those limitations, the possibilities are limitless. You know, it's depending on what, how far you want to push yourself to go out there and do different things.
Amazing. And the chairs themselves, are they? They look like they're modified in some way. Is that a chair that they? Is that their own chair? And then you add a guard to the front of it for the kicking part, or are they faster?
Yeah, some people use their everyday chair mm-hmm. to play. The upper level athletes tend to sometimes get a dedicated power soccer chair mm-hmm. that they. There are some different technologies out there where you can make them maybe go slightly faster or respond a little bit quicker, which can be beneficial in the sport. And then the foot guards that just attach to the frame of the wheelchair mm-hmm. and go around the legs and the feet to push and kick the ball with. And you can attach those to any type of wheelchair in order to be able to do that.
And then from your perspective as a coach, you mentioned that you saw a lady that you thought she was going to be a good soccer player. So when you moved into coaching this sport and you see people, I'm just wondering what you look for in a player. You were able to take them to, you know, national champions. What do you look for in a good power soccer player, and how is there any difference in the philosophy of sort of teaching this sport?
Well, in looking for a player, I look at anybody in a power wheelchair mm-hmm. because I want to share the sport with anybody who uses a power chair around the world, because I think it's just an opportunity to be able to get out there, play a sport, be involved, and gain all those intangible skills that you get from sport that previously people haven't been given that opportunity or said that's not possible. Mm-hmm. for you to play. So I think getting out there and sharing the sport with everyone is really important. As far as finding a good player to reach the highest level, well, it's some of the basics. As with any sport, it comes down to fundamentals. And are you able to drive your chair well? Are you able to communicate effectively? Are you able to manipulate your chair in tight spaces and do it quickly? And mm-hmm. and they have the body control to do that. And so just by looking at a person and how they drive and how they're able to maneuver the chair just around the house or around the place of work, and then also how they're able to communicate with other people. Communication is a big thing for me as a coach on and off the court, and seeing how they communicate with others and interact with each other, and their ability to grasp different concepts and then be able to carry them out. Some of those are just the basic things that I look for. And then when someone's willing to learn and put the time and energy into and the effort into practicing and doing those things, I think the possibilities are endless for people who want to do that.
Do you have any players who can't talk or whose communication is impaired in some way?
I do, not on the national team so much, but on my local team, I have a person who has cerebral palsy,
mm-hmm.
and he uses a keypad or a little computer
mm-hmm.
to communicate or talk. He doesn't use it on the court. On the court, he can let out different noises,
mm-hmm.
or I'll say grunts, for lack of a better term, where you can, just by being familiar with him and how he communicates, you can understand maybe if he's saying left or right by saying, I'm going left, or, you know, he'll let out a different noise than
mm-hmm.
going right, or saying, I got it, or something like that. And there, I have another player on a different team who, the guy with the head controls, he is nonverbal as well, but can let out different noises that
mm-hmm.
you can get a sense after playing with him that, you know, what he's knowing and feeling and communicating. And there's I have another girl who has cerebral palsy that has the same thing. She's not able to communicate very clearly. And so, but you can tell by, and a lot of it too is by her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if she looks a different direction or if is looking down at something, and after getting to know and playing with them and coaching them, you can get to know what they're thinking and what they're wanting to communicate just by different gestures and different movements and what the top of the conversation is. So there are plenty of people nonverbal out there that are playing.
That's really interesting that, you know, what you said earlier about it's not just and I actually just talked to Erica Bogan, who's Miss Wheelchair America, about this, because she does a lot of different sports. And I think there's a tendency for people that are that we would consider able-bodied to look at wheelchair sports and think, well, that is sort of, it's an inferior version of another sport. So we're going to take a sport that is typical and we're going to change it in some way so that different people are able to play it. But what you said it seems to be totally spot on from what I understand, is it's not a different version of an existing sport. It really is a sport in and of itself. And what made me think of this just now is you said with understanding, you know, watching for eye movements from a player who's nonverbal or understanding different vocalizations. I talked to comedian Josh Blue, one Last Comic Standing, and he said he has cerebral palsy. And he says, what you don't realize about a lot of disabled people is we see the world as a chess match. Like, you would just look through a room and say, I'm here and I want to go there. He says, but I got to look and I got to say, well, there's something I can grab onto that thing and, you know, just to be stabilize myself through a maze, basically. And it adds an extra dimension of the sport in my mind that you're not just out there hitting a ball with a wheelchair. You're having to understand all of this stuff that maybe a lot of people take for granted.
Yeah, when you look at some of the other sports, well, I'll just compare it to outdoor soccer.
Mm-hmm.
There's the guys who play outdoor soccer, you know, we're very similar in the fact that, you know, it's the sport is soccer and you want to do, the outcome is score a goal and you got to pass and you got to dribble, but it's a little bit different in that we have to maybe understand one or two different little things about ourselves and our bodies,
mm-hmm.
and what we can and can't do with the wheelchairs. You know, most of the outdoor athletes are able to run real fast, kick the ball, you know, real dynamically, and they have to train their bodies to do that. But, you know, and as well, we have to train our bodies to be able to do the same thing. I think it's similar, and yet it's a little different because there's maybe more to consider,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's where you were leading to. There's more we have to consider. Well, if I'm able, you know, I want to do that dynamic kick, well, what are the things I have to do to allow my body to do that? Instead of like someone who's able-bodied, oh, I'm just going to go out and kick the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, in order to make that dynamic kick, I have to strap my arms down to my armrest, my legs to my leg rest. I got to make sure my body is stable and that when I turn and kick the ball, I only turn so far and so fast and come around and make sure I follow through. And those are like 7 or 8 different things that I have to look and process for myself to be able to do one action versus someone who's able-bodied. Well, I'm just going to bring my leg back and bring it forward and I kick the ball.
Right. Yeah. Excellent. Cool. Well, that's about it on time today, Chris. So do you have any parting shots, anything before we tie up that I might have just forgotten to ask you about or anything?
Well, one of the things that – one of my taglines that I tell people all the time through speaking and some of my writing is that you are able and that you are able to do anything you want to do as long as you believe and take action in what you're doing. And sometimes people hold themselves back from doing what they want to do, or other people or outside forces hold people back from what they're doing. But if you really believe that there's something out there for you and that you want to do, and just taking that action to go out there and find it and do it, you know, power soccer for me was something that, you know, I believe there was a sport out there for me. I just didn't know where it was. And when I finally got on the court, I was like, yes, this is my passion. This is what I want to do. This is where I want to go, what I want to be involved with. And then I took action and just got involved and put everything I had into the sport. And it took me to whole new heights that I never would have thought. I never would have thought I'd be traveling across the world winning a, I dreamed that I'd become a world champion back when I was 10 years old, and look what happened. You know, you are able to do what you want to do.
That's one of the things I forgot to mention, too, is you have a book coming out under that title, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so we should mention that as well. Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Chris. I really appreciate it. It was great talking to you. I always enjoy learning about new stuff and meeting new folks. So this has been great. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks for having me, and it's been a pleasure. And check out Power Soccer, everybody.
Absolutely. All right, this is Johnny B. Truant signing off for the Badass Project.